Welcome to the Climate Report on WFMP-FM Louisville. This is Hart Hagen, your host, and we are on episode number 102. Today's topic is unrealistic economics. Unrealistic economics. We'll be talking about unrealistic economics in a few minutes, but first, here's what the Climate Report is all about. At the Climate Report, we believe that climate change is real, which is an understatement. It's not only real, but it's urgent that we deal with it. The changes that are occurring to our Earth are already catastrophic. The catastrophic part of climate change is not in the distant future. The catastrophic part of climate change is now, and it's only going to get exponentially worse as time goes on. In fact, if we stopped consuming and emitting fossil fuels right now, there would still be a certain amount of warming that would be built in to our system. Because when you put carbon into the atmosphere, there is a delayed effect. And that molecule of carbon, or methane, continues to warm the atmosphere for thousands of years. As it warms the atmosphere, it sets in motion other processes, such as the melting of the Arctic, such as the melting of glaciers on Greenland, such as the melting of the Antarctic, such as the melting of the ice caps on mountains, on which people depend for their drinking water, for their agricultural activities. So the catastrophic part of climate change is here and now. And it's time that we stop covering our ears and covering our eyes and looking away and thinking about other things. Now, if you're listening to this show, I'm preaching to the choir. But as a society, we're in complete denial. And we should really ask the question, what would it look like if we stopped pretending? What would it look like if our government stopped pretending that the catastrophic effects of climate change are in the vague and unspecified future? What would it look like if our government and our media and our business world stopped pretending that the consumption of fossil fuels is just okay? The good news is that we have a chance to change everything. We have a chance to create a whole new world. We have a chance to create a world in which we can breathe cleaner air. We have a chance to create a world in which we can drink clean water, and we have a chance to create a world in which our streams and waterways and underground aquifers are not polluted with the effects of our activities. We have a chance to create a world in which there is a reasonable amount of equality. We have a chance to create a world in which we actually have a democracy, because right now we don't actually have a democracy because money is so big. You know, a democracy is where there's one person, one vote. But that's not what we have because irrespective of who we elect locally, at the state level, or at the federal level, irrespective of who we elect, they get into office and they do the will of big corporations. Because money talks and money is power, but we have a chance to change that. Because in reality, it is urgent that we change that, because money kind of has a mind of its own, and money does not care what happens to our world. And another reason why money is problematic is that we have given all the power to those who have the most money. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of the big banks, but not the people. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of oil companies, but not the people. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of pharmaceutical companies, but not the people. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of agribusiness, but not the people. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of multinational restaurant corporations, but not the people. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of telecommunications companies, but not the people. We have laws and policies that reflect the interests of big media companies, those that deliver us news, newspapers, television, movies. Our laws and policies reflect their needs and interests, but not the needs and interests of the people. that could change. If we had a true democracy, then we would have an entirely different world. But we've never really had a true democracy, because there's true democracy and then there's the illusion of democracy. If no matter who you vote for, they're owned by the big banks, then that's the illusion of democracy. If no matter who you vote for, they're owned by the war profiteers, that's the illusion of democracy. If no matter who you vote for, they go to Washington, D.C., and they're controlled by the people who brought us NAFTA and the World Trade Organization at the expense of people, then that's the illusion of democracy. It's not a real democracy. And many people know this, but many other people don't know it, so it's important that we talk about it. It's important that we acknowledge that we only have so much democracy. We must understand that big corporations are the power behind the throne in Washington, D.C., in our state capitals, and in our local governments. We must understand that big corporations are at war with the people of America and the people of the world. That's not hard to see right now in the drumbeat for war against Venezuela. Somebody might say, "Hart, we're not at war with Venezuela yet," and the key word there is yet. We have imposed sanctions on Venezuela, which is illegal, it's unethical, it's immoral, it is against international law. So sanctions are where one country prevents trade from occurring with another country. So some people in our media point to how people of Venezuela are struggling. And they'll also talk about the sanctions, but they'll never acknowledge that there's a connection between the sanctions and the economy. There's a connection between the sanctions and the hyperinflation. There's a connection between the sanctions and the shortage of food. There's a connection between the sanctions and the shortage of paper goods, like toilet paper. And yes, we will likely be at war with Venezuela very soon. And it's for three reasons, none of which the corporate media is talking about. The three reasons are, number one, they have resources. Number two, they want to be independent and not a part of the worldwide capitalist colonial system of which the United States is the creator and the enforcer. And number three, they don't want to sell their oil for dollars. So those are the three factors which determine whether we will be intervening in a country. Iraq had the same three factors. They had a lot of resources. Saddam Hussein was too independent from the United States. Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, but our war with Iraq had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein being a bad guy. If we wanted to stop bad guys, then we need to stop funding bad guys all around the world. There's lots and 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 lots of bad guys all around the world that we support. They're in power because we support them. So the fact that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy had nothing to do with the war in Iraq. It had to do with oil. It had to do with the fact that they wanted to be independent of the United States. And it had to do with the fact that they didn't want to sell their oil for dollars. When a country like Saudi Arabia sells its oil for dollars, that supports the value of the dollar and it supports the big banks. And it's important to keep them happy because they're the ones that count. And we might think that it's our government that went to war with Iraq and that it's our government that wants to go to war with Venezuela. And there's some truth in that. But you have to understand that corporations are the power behind the throne. What government does is determined by the biggest corporations. It's those corporations that caused war in Vietnam, war in Iraq, the invasion of Panama, sanctions against Iraq for 20 years. It's those corporations that want the United States to go to war with Iran. It's those corporations that are making life miserable for people in Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras, which is our client states. They're technically our allies, but the allies of whom? They're not the allies of the people of the United States, and they're not the allies of their own people. They're the allies of the multinational corporations that are the power behind the throne in Washington, D.C. And we must understand that these big corporations are at war with the people of America, at war with the people of the world, and at war with all life on Earth. The Climate Report is a course in intellectual self-defense, so we can defend ourselves against the onslaught of corporate propaganda and even laugh at it, because the things we are asked to believe are truly ridiculous. We must learn to separate the rhetoric from the reality so that we can be powerful players in a functioning democracy. Emphasis on the word functioning democracy. And that's what the Climate Report is all about. This program is part of WFMP's Public Affairs Educational Programming. The views expressed are those of the speaker and not the station. If you have any comments, questions, or feedback, please email info@theclimatereport.net. Now, what we're going to do for the rest of this episode is to review an article. This is good stuff. This is juicy. We're going to review an article in the Wall Street Journal. The article is called The Unrealistic Economics of the Green New Deal. It's dated February 13th, 2019, written by a gentleman named Greg Ipp, I-P, Greg Ipp. So the title is The Unrealistic Economics of the Green New Deal. The subtitle is Saving Planet, Creating Jobs Are Noble Ideas, But By Combining Them, Democratic Plan Exacts Too High a Cost. The article starts, "The Green New Deal that some Democrats unveiled last week is actually two deals, one to combat global warming, another to create millions of well-paid jobs for targeted groups. Individually, both goals have their merits, but by combining them, the Green New Deal promises to make climate mitigation both absurdly expensive and deeply partisan, and is thus more likely to set back than advance the climate cause. The premise behind the Green New Deal is right. While the world may not spontaneously combust in 10 years, global carbon dioxide emissions need to start dropping soon, by a lot. To keep temperatures from rising more than 1.5 degrees Celsius from 1800s levels, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, increases beyond that raise the probability of extreme weather, deadly heat, and rising sea levels. Because the private market has no incentive to reduce carbon emissions, government intervention is necessary. But not all interventions are created equal, and the Green New Deals seem engineered to be as expensive as possible." So let's go back to the top and look at the headline, The Unrealistic Economics of the Green New Deal. Here's an assertion that may be extreme, but I believe I can back it up. And that is, economics is unrealistic. In the sense, mainstream economics is unrealistic. Mainstream economics does not reflect the reality of the world that we live in. When you hear economics reports, what do they report on more than anything else? They report on economic growth and unemployment. We have bought into the false notion that economic growth equals GDP. GDP means gross domestic product. It reflects the total amount of money that is exchanged for goods and services. So what's thought to be a respectable amount of economic growth is somewhere between 2 and 3%. In other words, in any given year, if you have 2%, 3% economic growth, that means 2 or 3% more money changed hands than it did in the previous year. It's the idea that the amount of money changing hands is somehow a reflection of our quality of life and is a reflection of the strength of our economy and is a reflection of how well our economy is working for people. But for the last 50 years, economic growth has gone primarily to the top 1%. I saw a figure recently that said 80% of growth has gone to the top 1%, which means 20% of the growth has gone to the 99%, which means on a per capita basis, 320 times as much economic growth has gone to the top 1%. And the question is that top 1% 320 times more productive? Is it 320 times more clever? Is it 320 times more intelligent? We know that's not true, and yet what the powers that be want us to believe is that if economic growth is 2 or 3% and unemployment is low, then it must be that the economy is working for everybody. So the title of this article is Unrealistic Economics, as if the Wall Street Journal, which is the spokesperson for the powers that be, as is the New York Times, as is the Washington Post, as is CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, as if the Wall Street Journal and all of their compatriots are going to tell us what realistic economics really is. On this topic, I would recommend a book called J is for Junk Economics by Michael Hudson. You can also look up Michael Hudson on YouTube. But be careful, because if you listen to him enough, you will start to believe, as you should, that when the talking heads talk about economics and when the corporate media talk about economics and when the mainstream newspapers talk about economics, they're talking about something that is 90% propaganda and less than 10% fact or logic. One thing about mainstream economics is that it is completely divorced from history. Here's how to tell a good economist from a propagandist. A good economist knows history. A good economist knows about the economics of the Roman Empire and the economics of the Middle Ages and the economics of the British Empire. By contrast, mainstream economics, they will never talk about history. They are completely clueless about what has happened historically, and what mainstream economists are delivering is an arcane theory that is a great deal more propaganda than anything rooted in history or logic or a concern for the needs and interests and fate of the vast majority of people who participate in the economy. So when I see Wall Street Journal talking about the unrealistic economics of the Green New Deal, I'm thinking the Wall Street Journal is in the business of unrealistic economics. Doesn't mean you can't read the Wall Street Journal and get some good facts, because actually, when it comes to delivering facts, it's one of the best. It's my favorite national newspaper, because you can get a lot of factual information from the Wall Street Journal, but the worldview they are advancing is more fantasy than reality. And that's why I would like for you to have your own list of reality-based sources. I have a list of reality-based sources, and my list is going to be different from your list. But my reality-based sources include Noam Chomsky, Naomi Klein, Chris Hedges, Michael Hudson, Jeffrey Sachs, Michael Parenti. You'll learn a lot more from people like that than from mainstream news or mainstream textbooks, because the mainstream news and the mainstream textbooks don't exist to advance and promote the needs and interests of the vast majority or to convey factual information. They exist to support the needs and interests and concerns of money. They exist to support the needs, interests, and concerns of the oligarchy. They exist to support the needs, interests, and concerns of the plutocracy. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Money is power. If it's true that money is power, then you would expect money to be able to buy a certain amount of public opinion. So you need to understand that the mainstream news sources and even mainstream textbooks, because they are supported by money, they exist to buy a certain amount of power. So let's look at the subtitle of this article. Saving Planet, Creating Jobs Are Noble Ideas, but by combining them, Democratic plan exacts too high a cost. So that's been a prevailing theme in the mainstream media. The prevailing theme in the mainstream media when they talk about the Green New Deal is what it costs. What they don't tell you is what does it cost to not implement some serious version of the Green New Deal. What they don't tell you is how much it costs to continue business as usual. What they don't tell you is how much it costs to subsidize fossil fuels. They don't tell you how much it costs to pay $1 trillion a year for a war machine. They don't tell you how much it costs to lose all of our topsoil to erosion because we have an unsustainable agribusiness-based food system. They don't tell you how much it costs workers and consumers to have to live under trade deals like NAFTA. They don't tell you how many jobs NAFTA has cost. They don't tell you how much it costs for our 2/3 of our economy to be controlled by Fortune 500 corporations. They don't tell you how much it costs for big corporations to deaden the local economy, because it's so difficult to have a local business or a local restaurant when you're under competition from these national chains. That's not whining and complaining, that's just the reality such as it is, but it does not have to be that way. And they don't tell you how much it costs to have a government that systematically and on a large scale takes money from working people and even the upper middle class and puts it in the pockets of banks and war profiteers and agribusiness corporations. And they don't tell you how much it costs to live under the fantasy that says the American economy is vigorous because of the free market. Because that's not how our economy works. At least it's not what makes our economy dynamic. Federal spending has a great deal more to do with a dynamic economy than a fantasy of a non-existent free market. Just consider how, look at your cell phone. Think of how much electronics technology has added to our economy and added to our opportunities, but that was entirely created by the federal government. Specifically, it was entirely created by the Defense Department, because the Defense Department carried on research for 35 years before it was marketable enough for Steve Jobs to do anything about it, before it was marketable enough for Bill Gates to do anything with it and create a huge profit. So that is one example of how our government systematically takes money from the taxpayer, develops technology, hands it over to big business, and then the shareholders of that big business profit off of what the taxpayer funded for countless years and decades. So that's what I call upward wealth redistribution. So what we're talking about on this episode is unrealistic economics. Unrealistic economics means the standard fare, the concepts that are constantly fed to us through the mainstream media. So when you hear terms like free market, or you hear terms like GDP, gross domestic product, you hear terms like unemployment, there's always a disconnect between the rhetoric and the reality. In the case of unemployment, for example, okay, so let's say that unemployment is at 3 or 4%. Does that mean people are employed in good-paying jobs? Does that mean wages are increasing relative to inflation? Does that mean people have benefits that they didn't have 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 50 years ago? What does unemployment really mean? It means almost nothing. In and of itself, it means almost nothing. If we hear the term unemployment, does that mean a person is employed in a job that where they work 30 hours a week, 40 hours a week, 20 hours a week, 10 hours a week? What does it mean? A much more meaningful figure, if we were ever given the opportunity to think about it, is what is labor's share of earnings? How much are people earning as a percentage of their company's revenue? How much are people earning as a percentage of GDP? How much are people earning as a function of the overall revenue flowing through the economy? Any Green New Deal worthy of the name is going to increase labor's share of revenue. Any Green New Deal worthy of the name is going to increase the health of local economies. Any Green New Deal worthy of the name is going to decrease toxic pollution in our environment. Any Green New Deal worthy of the name is going to reduce inequality. Any Green New Deal worthy of the name is going to give working class people and professionals more interesting work to do. For example, the article talks about the Green New Deal's plan to upgrade every building in the U.S. to maximum energy efficiency is even more questionable. A study by Meredith Fowley, Michael Greenstone, and Catherine Wolfram in the Quarterly Journal of Economics found the federal government paid an average of $4,500 each to weatherize homes in Michigan. Extrapolate that to 95 million homes nationwide, and the bill tops $400 billion. The cost of avoided carbon dioxide up to $285 per ton. So what this says is that any Green New Deal worthy of the name is going to have federal funding to make homes and buildings more energy efficient. But the purveyors of junk economics, in Michael Hudson's terminology, the purveyors of junk economics only look at the cost of the Green New Deal. They don't look at the benefits of the Green New Deal. If the government is paying for homes to be weatherized, then that's a cost to the government, but it's income to somebody. We just need to make sure that that income is not captured by a few rapacious, toxic corporations. We need to make sure that income is captured by local economies. We need to make sure that income is captured by tradespeople. We need to make sure that income is captured by city planners and community banks and, well, basically 90 or 95% of people who are not the wealthiest. I'm not saying these issues are simple or easy. I'm saying look out for junk economics. Look out for the purveyors of fantasy. Look out for the people who give you all the facts and figures except the ones that matter. Look out for the people who are in the pockets of the very rich. Look out for the people who are quite happy, thank you, that the economy continues to enrich the richest people at the expense of everybody else. Look out for the people who only focus on the good things that corporations do and ignore the damage, ignore the devastation, ignore the risk. That's about all the time we have, but what we really need to do is be able to read the headlines and separate the rhetoric from the reality, be able to separate truth from fiction, be able to separate those who are concerned for the vast majority from those who are advancing the interests of the very, very, very few. Thanks for joining me. Hope you'll come back next time.